This is Femi Kuti, and you are listening to NYC Radio Live.
All right, you are listening to NYC Radio Live. My name is David Ellenbogen. So great to have you here with me. Got a kind of exciting guest. Caught him at nowhere other than the Beacon Theater, where his group, the California Honey Drops, brought the house down. They've been touring with Bonnie Raitt for... I don't know, I think a couple months or so. Great guy, great band, and they're really going places. People, their concerts are like a party, and their music's very joyful, and they really aim to interact with the audience and make that connection. So, yeah. We got to hang out in our very own NYC home studio with Lesh Wierzynski, the lead singer and writer and multi-instrumentalist and behind a lot of their great songs. And we'll play that in just a second. We just also had a few shows coming up. Brooklyn Raga Massive will be at Pioneer Works this Wednesday, 4:20. Playing the great rock songs from the canon of rock music. And then Kersh Kale will be doing the closing 4:27 event at Pioneer Works. Been an amazing, amazing run. Hundreds of people, you know, getting 200 a night, 250 a night. It's really exciting. And the last show that I hope to share with you, last week's show, Raga Cubana, was a smash. So I hope to share some of that with you. And that was thanks to the Afro-Cuban master, Roman Diaz. So anyway, here we are hanging out with Lesh Wierzynski from the California Honey Drops. You're going to love their music if you haven't heard it already. And as always, thanks for listening. Lots more to come. Peace. You guys met in Berkeley Music School? Is that
The band started all over the place. The original band, we started in the Bay Area, and me and the drummer and the current drummer both went to Oberlin Ohio with your friend Jay.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Gotcha.
So that's really more like the home ground of the band is from that friendship. And then moving out to the Bay, we picked up a bunch of musicians out in the Bay Area and played in the street a lot. For the most part, at the beginning,
Now I've met a lot of great musicians who got their start playing in the street, or not get their start, but that it was like a period that they really look back on fondly.
Definitely for us.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Yeah, we did it a lot. We still like to do it. We still like to come off stage and play down on the floor, and you know, if we have some time off, sometimes we'll just still go and play in the street. It's just fun.
What about it?
I mean, there's so many things are different about it and fun about it. I mean, A, no one knows who you are. You know, There's no expectations. People haven't paid to see you, so you're taking them by surprise. You know, you're on the ground. You're not on a stage. You can kind of just do whatever you want. There's no middleman. There's no club. There's just no formalities that you have to deal with. That you have to deal with booking a show, and that's why we started doing it, was because shows were hard to book. And we wanted experience playing for people. So there's no better way than just to go out there and play in front of people and see what happens.
Right. And your style kind of suits itself for that, because it's kind of undeniable. Like, people can't fight really tight vocal harmonies. Right? I mean, there's...
Yeah, resistance is futile. Yeah, I don't. I mean, you know, we did back in those days. A lot of it was, yeah, people mostly respond to singing a lot on the street when you're playing. If you start singing in harmony, it definitely stops people more than probably anything else. Mm. Between that and a really good groove, you know, those are the two things that I always notice, that when the groove really tightens up and gets into that juicy spot, people stop. Or when they hear vocal harmonies, they stop.
Wow.
Those are the two things that really kind of create, they kind of create like a space that's bigger than the music. So even if you're playing quiet or whatever, if you have those things happening, all of a sudden it kind of permeates the ether of the area that people are in, and they kind of get sucked into it, you know.
Right. Something's happening.
Yeah, something's happening, exactly.
Yeah, my friend Matt Kilmer said when people have really great time, incredible time, something stands up within them and something stands up within the listener. Like, I don't know what it is. I mean, really, it's actually like a type of truth. Like, you know, like trite time is like you're dividing time.
Right.
Perfectly, mathematically, geometrically or whatever. Okay. I mean, you've kept, and your band has kept these kind of winning things. Another quality is that street performers wouldn't be able to get away with like a kind of monotone singing, slightly depressed singing style, or something like that.
That's not going to fly. Go, yeah. No. No, you got to give them something to, you know, something to make them happy. Yeah.
Right, and you've developed those pipes.
Yeah, and so that's also just the type of music I've always loved. Mm-hmm. You know, something with a little bit, they don't all have to be happy, but it's got to make you feel good, at least.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it can be about a sad topic, but it's got to just make you feel something that feels alive and feels uplifting in some kind of way. You know, sad and happy is kind of, you know, those are, you know, very kind of like basic things.
Right. Well, actually, that would be a great time for us to listen to something. What's a tune that puts a smile on people's faces?
Oh, Broke Down. That's a lot of people's favorite. Uh-huh. We did it on this last record. Broke Down Parts 1 and 2. People love that. And it's a song that the most people have come up to me and say, hey, I was going through something, you know, and this song helps me, you know, or that song helped me. So that's, you know, that's the best thing you could ever hear is somebody who wrote a song, is that somebody's getting something real positive out of the music. And that's the one that I get that mostly out of. And it's one of the songs that people request the most.
All right, let's check it out. We'll be right back.
about what you don't know. And you can go looking for the high ground to see what's down that road. But you ain't gonna see nothing but the seeds you sow. Top of the hill you see home. Now you might feel like a stranger, but know that it won't be long. Cause there ain't no reason to hurry to that other shore. Cause you ain't gonna get nowhere till you know what for.
you still get something out of playing this song.
Yeah, yeah. I still enjoy it. I really do. I like playing it. I always enjoy it. And, you know, it also, you know, we've been playing for so long and it's changed over the years a lot. Mm-hmm. You can listen to like two other versions that are on there.
Yeah.
You know, just for your own shits and giggles to see how much it's changed. But, you know, it's really come a long way. And the words at this point is like, for me, it's like written by another person.
Mm.
So I don't really feel like I'm singing my own song so much anymore, right. Which is nice. It doesn't feel like when you're writing, you're playing your own song. You got a lot of investment about it. Like you want people to like it, and you know, you still feel attached to the person who wrote it.
Right.
But for me, it's so long ago that it's just a song to me.
Yeah.
I don't have that like, oh, this is my song.
Right. Everybody be quiet.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Well, and you know, one thing that's really enjoyable about your show is I kind of like at the end, kind of different people kind of take the lead. You know, it seems like while you are tend to be the lead singer, like it seems like you're not the front man because you have to be. Right? Like, it's not like, you know, you have issues and everybody has to be looking at you all the time. So, right? I mean, it seems like it just, like, that's...
Yeah,
that's,
no, we pass it around, for sure.
Yeah.
And we, you know, that's one of the things that makes it fun for us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, everybody, you know, Ben, the drummer, loves to talk to the crowd and hype them up and stuff. And Lolo, everybody has a lot to give out.
Right.
Forward, you know, towards the crowd. Everyone loves interacting with the crowd. That's the thing. A lot of people in the band enjoy that part of the show, so they want to do it too, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
We should mention that you're in town. I don't know if this will get online quick enough, but maybe you're playing with Bonnie Raitt a couple shows.
Yeah, at the Beacon, two nights at the Beacon on Friday and Saturday, and then one night at the Knitting Factory in Brooklyn.
And that's your guys.
And that's just us. Show, yeah. Oh yeah, we'll be gone. Wow. Four hours straight, baby. Get ready. You know, with Bonnie, we do this short. Oh, you know, it's an opening set, so it's real short. So we've been stretching out, which is what we always do anyway. But.
And she's heard you play before. She's been doing this.
Oh, we've
for
been
a while.
Doing a tour with her.
Oh,
so we've been on the road with her for a month now.
Yes.
Oh yeah, she's like she is our biggest fan.
That's
I think
sweet.
She likes us more than we like ourselves.
Oh,
she's the sweetest person in the world, and she loves the band. You know, that's the reason why she took us out with her.
Oh, that's sweet.
Yeah, we've been playing songs with her on her set as well. And
So it's been a pretty steady climb with you guys in terms of audience. I know you sold out Knitting Factory last time you were here, which is pretty impressive for a band not
California.
Yeah.
A band with California in its name.
Exactly. We didn't do that.
Yeah, you know, it's been a very slow and steady climb. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Very slow and very steady, but we've been doing it for fun. A lot of the time, you know, and at the beginning, you know, we just made that slow transition. We played a lot of weddings, we played a lot of, you know, just parties and just whatever. We went on a lot of random tours through Europe, like on trains, you know, before we had anything really going. We did a lot of stuff that was just for fun. We've never had a record label. And this was the first year that we hired a publicist 8 years after we started the band.
Wow.
So... You know, like, so it's been very slow, and we have a lot of the fans that are there are very dedicated. Most of the people you saw probably at the Knitting Factory were probably relocated from the Bay, you know, because the fans tend to be really diehard.
Right.
And they tend to want to come back every time, you know.
Right.
Because it's always a party. We try to make each show different, and just trying to go with the crowd, keep it interactive, like the street thing.
Right.
As just to keep it boring, so it's not like the type of thing that if you like us, you're not just going to see us once a lot of the time. You want to come back and have a party again, dance with your friends, or just see what happens because you kind of don't know. We try to keep it surprising, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
But you're not like suddenly going to insert some like avant-garde moments of like...
Or who are you?
I mean, you really don't know. I mean, it could be, yeah.
If that's what makes sense.
If that's what makes sense, yeah. Sometimes it gets pretty... Sometimes you can go out for a second, you know? You know, we all come from different backgrounds musically. There's not that much stuff that's,
out of off limits.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of times, you know, we're playing for, it's pretty party, you know, a lot. Although now with the Bonnie stuff has been very sit down crowds. So we've just been kind of playing music and it's all about just the music.
Right.
And we talk to them a little bit and just keep them happy. And keep it a little bit interactive, but they're all sitting down. There's not only so much you can do. So it's been a really been very musical. There's been a lot more ballads, but you know, Knitting Factory is probably just going to be another just a wild party where people want to dance and have a good time. So
right,
you know, and then we'll play things. We'll play free things. We went to Burning Man last year with the band, and we played that. Wow. As you know, you can play anything there.
Yeah.
You really can. So that type of thing, we might just go to space.
Country, and I'll play in every town, 'cause I'm trying to find my baby, but no one has seen around. Now you know just where I'm headed, if my baby can't be found. To the river, and the river spoke back to me. He said, "Boy, you look so lonely. You look full of misery. And if you can't find your baby," he said, "if you can't find your baby, boy, if you can't find your baby, ooh, come and make your home with me." Yeah. been on and on forever. We're gonna live on forever. Ooh, yeah. We're gonna live on and live on and live on. In a home among the tides, yeah, yeah.
So, one thing I definitely want to ask you about is kind of finding your voice.
Mm-hmm.
How'd that process go? Because you got a distinctive, really strong, amazing, you know, instrument there.
Oh, thanks.
So
That was a very slow process too.
Yeah,
very slow, and you can hear it on the records if you go back through all that crap, I might say, on Spotify. There's some stuff that I really don't sound good at all, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't really know how to sing. So I always wanted to sing, and I always enjoyed singing for myself. And we started out, you know, singing a lot on the street, but I was just kind of yelling, mm-hmm. for the most part, trying to be heard. And it took me a long time to kind of dial that back and figure out how to actually use my voice.
And was it from instruction or from listening to records?
It was a lot of everything. You know, I started out really, the person that really got me wanting to sing was Ray Charles. That was the moment that I really got into his music when I was in college.
Mm-hmm.
And my trumpet teacher had played in his band, and we got to talking about it. I was listening to a ton of Ray, and I just started wanting to sing really bad, because he's kind of like, I was sort of a jazz musician at the time, and it's kind of like Ray, he's kind of between a lot of worlds in terms, mm-hmm. of the way he does music. And it just appealed to me. Something about it really appealed to me, and I wanted to do that, but that wasn't really the way for me right away. It didn't come out that way. It didn't come out the way I was hearing it. And so I took some lessons, I took classical lessons, I took all kinds of lessons. I played in a lot of R&B bands. That was kind of the next step, was playing with a lot of good singers. I played with this guy, Jackie Payne, who was a great singer, like a Southern soul, rhythm and blues singer, and a lot of guys. This guy, Freddie Hughes from the Bay Area, who's, talk about an instrument, man. He had an unreal voice back in the day, especially, but still today. But unlike anything you've ever heard, in a style, really all his own. One of those cats that, you know, really he's like in the pantheon of soul gods, as far as I'm concerned, but just didn't, you know, get that recognition over the years. But and singing, just listening to guys like that were really good, that kind of came out of the church tradition and did the whole Chitlin circuit thing, and their style of entertaining and everything, that influenced me a lot. And just hearing them sing in the van and singing songs with them, kind of, I started hearing how to use the voice, what you can do. But it took a long time, very long time. And, you know, and then eventually it's influences, right? The people that you love the most. So it would be Ray Charles, or Claude Jeter is a singer I love from the Swan Silvertones, old gospel quartet. Quartet, that wasn't a quartet, but anyway. And then, you know, Sam Cooke, too. Those guys, those are probably my three biggest. And Bobby Blue Bland, three biggest singing influences. Wow. You know, those guys, they have really good diction. They have, you know, just amazing technique, all of them, in their own ways.
That's interesting. And that's never something I really thought about with them, was the diction, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah, they have excellent, you know, the gospel singers, a lot of them have, like, excellent diction. Especially right. Claude Jeter has just amazing, you know, all those guys, you know, Sam, right. Sam was great, and so was Ray, and so was Bobby Bland, you know, you can just hear every word, and it's really nice and clear, and you know, and then there's that soul that sings through the music, you know, the tradition of the music.
Right. Did your trumpet teacher give you any like inside information on like Ray Charles, like any kind of like stories or things?
He gave me some stories, but they weren't good.
Okay.
Okay. I'll tell you, I'll just leave it at that, you know, like he told me stuff he was, but you know, and everybody who I've ever met always, there's all kinds of stuff going around about the famous people, you know, some, a lot of which don't need to be repeated.
Sure. All right, well, one thing I heard, kind of a positive note, I would say, I was friendly with one of the Ray Letts.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Angie Dixon, I don't know if you know her. But she was with Ray for 10 or 11 years, and she said one of the tough things about being with Ray was that he basically had a sixth sense, and he would be frustrated that other people didn't, and he could read your thoughts, so you had to be careful what you would think around him, because he would say, now don't get all mad, don't be pulling faces or whatever, you know, you had to be really careful around him, because he could feel all that.
He could feel the vibes.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, he rode a motorcycle and bicycle and all that stuff. Yeah.
I mean, that's according to
his autobiography. Yeah, because there's a lot you can do with hearing that you know.
Yeah,
too.
I did hear that he had an amazing ear, you know, obviously, but that it was like on the level of precision that was just unreal. Yeah. Is what I've heard.
Like, bring that down at 11:56.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I heard he had like kind of like the golden engineer's ear.
Yeah,
you know, and stuff like that. And I heard that he was very demanding about the tempos and stuff like that, and he had a lot of people on their toes throughout the gig.
Scary.
Yeah, it's funny. Sometimes you watch the video. I go on, you know, YouTube binge to watch the videos, and you see like the bass player just watching him as he's like rocking at the piano, setting the tempo.
Yeah,
you know, while he's playing, and the bass player's just on his every move. You know.
Yeah.
So
I heard the trick was to watch him tap where he's
tapping. Yeah, yeah. It was the only way you could go, right?
Wow, isn't it crazy? I mean, we do music for fun, and yet it could be the scariest thing.
Yeah, that's what everybody. That's the stories I got from a lot of people. That people were like a lot of times just like scared, or like, like, oh my god, am I about to get yelled at? Am I about to get fired on stage in front of my family? Like,
right.
When they're here at the show, stuff like that.
Right.
Yeah.
So you guys. Do a whole bunch of genres, you know. You get into the, like, I love when you get into kind of the old school reggae feels like that. That's a lot of fun. But they're all your compositions.
Shows it's a mix. It's a all mix. Kinds of stuff. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, the shows is really a big mix, and uh-huh. everybody's got their own influences musically. So, you know, you mentioned the reggae thing. Ben, the drummer. And washboard player, he grew up playing mostly reggae and kind of Afro-Caribbean stuff, mm-hmm. and kind of African diaspora hand drumming. Mm-hmm. He became a kit drummer just for the band.
Oh, wow.
That's
cool.
A little experience with that. And we were just like, yeah, let's try it, you know. And we didn't even have a kit starting. When the band started, there was only washboard. So it was super broken down when we started the band, and then slowly it was like a snare drum, and then it became a bass drum and a snare drum, and then it became a hi-hat and a snare drum and a bass drum. And we've never added any toms. Mm-hmm. We kind of stopped at the basic, the cowbells, cool. You know, yeah. Snare drum. But yeah, but so people bringing their different influences has been a thing.
Nice. But you do, you write, you kind of, I don't know if it's intentional or not, but it seems that you write songs in various kind of genres and styles.
Yeah, that does. I don't do it on purpose. Sometimes mm-hmm. I just write the songs and then we put the feels to them later. You know what I mean? Right. Like the band just is like, well, we could play it like this. Or right. We could play it like that. Mm-hmm. Or we could play it like this and we could do this type of thing with it. And we've been hanging out with each other for so long and listening to so much music. We kind of have a lot of elasticity with the feels.
Right.
And I hear songs that way. I hear them kind of like, I had one of the founding members of the band that's not with us anymore, Nansamba, who used to play with us. She kind of had this ear for songs that she didn't hear them like in a genre. Mm-hmm. You know, she didn't hear songs. It was like always like, is it a song? And I never heard music that way until I was hanging out with her for years. And now I've kind of like adopted that. Now I'll hear any song on the radio. I don't care what type of song it is. I don't care if it's pop, country, rap, R&B, whatever. I just like, if it's a good song, I'm just like, that's a good song.
Mm.
And then I'm just so, we've all kind of adopted that now in the band.
Yeah, that's great. I feel like actually one of the things is like, a lot of things we consider guilty by association. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
so you hear... You hear a lot of, like, say, smooth jazz that really was meant to just be kind of commercial or something like that. And they'll use certain synth sounds. And then when you hear other recordings that use those sounds, you're like, oh, that's horrible. But actually, when they came out, none of this other crappy stuff had come out.
Right.
You know, but, like, it's you almost have to deprogram yourself.
No, totally, man.
Give in to the synth.
Give in to the saxophone, even. You know, for a generation of people, the only thing they can think of when they hear a saxophone is Kenny G. You know?
Yeah, soprano
and so
sax.
People hear a sax, and they're like, I don't like this.
Yep.
And in fact, when I was a kid, I did not like the saxophone. It took me a while to warm up to the saxophone because that's kind of, I always heard it with this kind of like whiny, super commercial, smooth quality to it, even though that's not the way people were playing it.
Right.
It was just like you said, the guilty by association. So I feel that for sure. And that's just our mind playing tricks on us.
Right. That's true. My last question, I'm just kind of curious. I mean, I made a lot of my money, I used to. When I made money, I was like doing wedding DJs, and the thing that killed me was like that, like everybody else was just partying like that was what they did when they weren't at their job, but my job was the party, and that became kind of exhausting just everything, the volume and all that. So how do you navigate that? Since you know your band develops such a festive kind of party atmosphere.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely can be tough, but luckily we have like a very broad range of fans. You know, like different people from different age ranges, and some of them like to and so we do shows for old people where it's like at a club with seats, and they know that that's what it's going to be, and that's what they come to.
Right.
And the same city, and then we'll do another place that's for the party.
Right, but what's
it keeps us sane.
Right, because it can't just be one thing.
Yeah, I love them both, but like you said, the volume and like the job of trying to bring up that energy every day and like please all these people that are just drunk and like, I don't know, it can be annoying, and no doubt about it. But sometimes it can be the best thing in the world. It just depends on. Your moderation with it. But we've tried to make our tour schedule so we can do a little bit of both.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I bet you probably have developed some serious chops in terms of crowd management. I bet you know what to do for just about anybody and how...
Sometimes there's nothing you can do. sometimes it's hard. It can be hard still, because we don't play... One thing we don't do is we don't play loud. Mm-hmm. We don't play particularly loud as far as like right. party dance type bands go, we play right. really quiet. So when the crowd is really loud, when they're just talking, yeah. that's a problem.
Right.
You know, because we're not going to play over that. And that's no fun for us. And we right. don't want to do it. And so I just tell them, I start getting on them about shutting up. And that can be difficult. I got to tell them, hey, you know, I know that it's not 1945 anymore. And some of y'all, and you know, and I know that some of y'all are 20 years old and just want to get laid tonight. You know, and then you're not here for the music, but you need to go to the back, you know, uh-huh. and you can talk there. I appreciate that you came, that you brought me, you bought a ticket.
Right.
It's going in my pocket. I appreciate that. But let the people who want to hear the music in the front, y'all go to the back. No talking. You want to dance? You want to sing? You right. want to clap? You want to do anything like that? You can stay in the front. You want to stand there and listen? You can stay in the front. But, you know, that's hard, though. That's it, hard. That gets works. Hard, especially with young crowds, because young people, they don't know. They don't know about music. They don't know about live music.
Instruments.
yeah. They're used to showing up at a DJ thing and just partying. So when they think about a dance party, they're thinking about going to see a DJ where they can talk. Right. They can just stand there and talk if they don't.
Right.
And it's like, yo, I'm up here. You guys got to interact with me.
Wow.
They're like, sometimes really young crowds are like, they're like shocked how much I'm engaging them. You know, they just want to stand and like watch you and be amazed. And that's not really what we're into. Or they want to like sit there, stand there and party with their friends.
Right.
And I'm just like, that's not what we're here to do. Like, we're here to do this thing together. And that takes some skills. And, you know, I can't say I always succeed, but most times we get it yeah. going.
You know, one of my standard tricks is to get people to clap for something that they have to clap for. And most people won't even hear what you're saying when it's really loud, you know.
Right, right.
So you force them.
You know,
let's give it up for mothers. Yeah. Let's get the fire department's here, ladies and gentlemen. Whatever, you know, things yeah. that you have no choice, even you know,
right, right, just to get them to all do something
and then,
together.
And then, yeah, and then when they start clapping, you go into a song.
Yeah,
yeah, that's like
We do that. Yeah, that's true. We get them to sing a lot. Uh-huh. I get them just to sing a lot. I make them sing stuff. I just right. make stuff up, and then they sing back to me, and that gets them to focus. But I'm right. telling you, these children these days, man. They got short attention spans. You got to be making up somebody new in the room every 5 seconds with them.
You
know,
wow.
It can be hard. It can be hard, you know. But it can be fun, too. And once you break them, you know, there's nothing like that feeling of a room that was really stiff at first. People that were afraid to let loose. There's nothing like that feeling of watching them having the best time of their lives by the end of the night.
Wow.
Like everybody dancing together and just like, you can see seeing them make that like kind of leap, making like, right. hey, like I'm gonna maybe I haven't danced before or whatever. Maybe right. I haven't gone this crazy before, but I'm gonna turn around and talk to this random person and have some fun with them, you know,
right.
and dance with them. That's a great feeling when you can break that, you know.
That's deep. I mean, when you think about it, that, it's the goal of the music is to make one thing happen.
Right.
One thing is happening. We're all in this thing together.
Right. Yeah.
That's deep, man. Wow. Well, I think everybody's going to hear a lot more from you guys. I mean, California Maybe. Honey Drops.
I'm buoyed by your optimism.
I don't know. I mean, it's like, how could you not like you guys? You guys are like
too likable. It's just gross.
I mean, that could
it's
be the gross. Thing. That could like, be the problem.
Oh, stop.
Big problem.
Stop making me say yeah over and over again. Like, stop making me try to feel so good. Sing a sad song. There's right. nothing to be happy about. The world is ending, man.
Can you tamp down the soul?
Yeah, yeah.
I went to that again.
I'm tired of all this today. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised because everything is soul music now. Everyone's calling themselves soul right, music right. now. So, you know, or R&B influence. So, hey, you know, there's going to be a backlash. But luckily, we've never called ourselves either of those things. So it's going right. to be easy.
Good. Under the radar.
Yeah. So.
All right. Well, stay tuned. I don't know if this will air in time, but April 3rd. At the Knitting Factory, Lesh and his buddies from the California Honey Drops will be... It'll sell out, probably. It did last time. Maybe
it right? definitely will. I would recommend getting your tickets in advance
yeah.
if this airs.
And keep your eyes open, your ears open. And thanks for your time, man.
Yeah, man. Hell yeah.
feel happy, yeah, I feel good all the time. Yeah, some people, they say I use a needle. Others say I sniff cocaine. But just one hit off a reefer is all this Polish boy really needs.